This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Winning is hard, and we're finding out how hard it is, especially real hockey. Yeah, and again, it's the National Hockey League every night stuff, but this is next level type stuff. And tonight, our guys stepped up.
Okay, so that's Derek Lalonde of the Detroit Red Wings, head coach of that squad. Newsy, if you will, for you old schoolers. I want to get to this Ryan Smith tweet here in a couple of moments. People believe that I'm trolling the Coyotes by amplifying and adding to it. I am not, but we'll get there in a couple of seconds. So that's Derek Lalonde, head coach of the Detroit Red Wings. The Detroit Red Wings, who all of a sudden find themselves in a wild card position. But as we've seen with the wild card positions in the Eastern Conference, specifically WC2, we had a situation where five teams occupied that spot over the course of 5 days. Five different teams. April 3rd, it was the Washington Capitals with wild card 2. On the 4th, it was the Islanders. On the 5th, it was the Flyers. And on the 6th was the Red Wings. And that's where we sit right now. The Detroit Red Wings right now, who knows? I mean, Pittsburgh Penguins could leapfrog them tonight with their victory over the Toronto Maple Leafs. Right now, the Red Wings are in that second wild card spot. I don't know how to describe it. We've all come up with sort of different terms and ways to try to figure out how we should describe what we're seeing here. The does anybody want this spot race? Whether it's the Islanders, the Wings, the Penguins, the Capitals, the Flyers. And if you squint really hard before this weekend, you could have said the New Jersey Devils, but no longer. The interesting thing about this one is Detroit finds themselves in a very unique spot because the Detroit Red Wings only have one path, and that is wild card 2. They only have one path to get into the postseason. Meanwhile, the Islanders and the Penguins and the Capitals, and we should throw in the Philadelphia Flyers too, they are not dead. Or as Frank Zappa once said, Jazz isn't dead, it just smells funny. Philadelphia Flyers are not dead. They just smell funny right now. Losers of 7. Philadelphia Flyers are still in this thing too. And all of those teams, the Islanders, the Penguins, the Caps, and the Flyers, they have two ways to get in. Either third in the Metropolitan, right now that's the Islanders, or wild card 2. This isn't going to get solved this week, is it? Like, we're all waiting for this to finally, okay, some team plants the flag and they're in and then it's done. We all know this isn't going to happen this week. Now, there's going to be some interesting games coming up this week. There's going to be an interesting game tonight between the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Toronto Maple Leafs. There's also a great nightcap game tonight between the Vancouver Canucks and the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll see the debut of Tomas Hertl. We're going to get there in a couple of moments. But we don't really think this is going to be over this week, right? Like, this is going right to the very end, right? Like, this is going to go all the way to the end. Maybe to the last game of the season, and it's going to come down to that Pittsburgh Islanders game, isn't it? Because that's the way it feels for me. Maybe it feels the same way for you. Coming up on the program today, Ellie is traveling to Vancouver. He's on his way there, so he will be back tomorrow. Craig Morgan from PHNX Sports via Zoom, he'll be dropping by at the bottom of the hour. We'll also talk to Brian Boyle of the NHL Network, former NHL forward. He will be aboard. And Josh Getzoff, play-by-play voice of the Pittsburgh Can They Do This Penguins, who are doing it not just with Sidney Crosby, too, but also, and it was really nice to see his parents having a little sort of cry as their son scored 2 goals against Tampa on the weekend, on Saturday specifically. Evgeny Malkin's been fantastic as well. So it's not as much as we sort of position this as if the Penguins get in, Crosby gets the heart. It's not just Crosby. The lion's share is Crosby, but Malkin's been fantastic as well. In the meantime, Matt Marchese joins me now. Matty, did you see what Ryan Smith tweeted out not too long ago?
I sure did. You're not trolling.
Okay.
You're not trolling, but I think we all have a sense of where this thing is going. Like, I get it.
So Ryan Smith is the owner of the Utah Jazz. Ryan Smith if you listen or watch this program, you know who Ryan Smith is. Bluntly, he's the guy who's trying to bring pro hockey to Salt Lake City, bring pro hockey, NHL hockey to Utah. So half an hour ago, he tweets this out. If an NHL team were to come to Utah, what should we name it? Fill out the survey and send your ideas. To which I just amplified and added, asking for no particular reason, just curious. To which Jonathan Davis, our good buddy West Coast Hockey, submitted, asking for a friend. I got a lot of Arizona people saying, are you trolling us with that retweet of Ryan Smith saying, what should we call the team? Anyhow, so that saga continues. And listen, we'll talk more about the Arizona Coyotes with Craig coming up at the bottom of the hour. Meantime, five teams in 5 days holding WC2. One of, but not the only, big story coming out of the weekend. How you doing, Maddie? What's on your mind today?
Good. Actually, you know, I'm not going to sabotage your show, but I had to give a quick shout out because something big happened in the Marchese family this weekend. And it wasn't me this
You're
time.
You're pregnant.
No, I'm not. Although some people will look and go, you are lying. But no, I just want to give a shout out. The King Rebellion U13 AA team won the OMHAs this weekend. My brother's the goalie coach there. My pal Mark, who I played hockey with growing up, is the assistant coach. And they're off to Timmins for the OHFs. Big win. Jeff, this is how hockey is in my house, and you know how it is in your house. My dad was at the game. My dad was in tears after the game for my brother, which kind of, you know, it hits a nerve with me as well.
Cause hockey tears.
He's been there a long time. So anyway, but aside from that wonderful thing that happened, I had this thought over the weekend because I remember last week we were talking about, you know, the you take it, I don't want it, WC2. And you're saying, you know, can somebody just take this thing and go on a run and be done with it, whatever? I look at it and say, what is the best thing in hockey? It is game seven. It is do or die, overtime, whatever it is. And you could potentially have two games that have that meaning come the final game of the year. That's why, for me, I hope that everybody keeps fumbling this until the last game of the year, because that is absolutely must-watch TV. It's the appetizer of the playoffs before we get to the main course, which I think would be a great finish to what's been a really interesting year.
It has been, and it's coming right down to the end here. And we always like to do this around this time of year, and why not? If the playoffs started today, Maddie, here's what we'd be looking at. Dallas and Vegas. What kind of statement was that last night from the Dallas Stars?
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, my God. Like, if you thought that, I don't know what you thought about the Dallas Stars, but if you're not a believer in how good Dallas is right now, 7-4. I know there's no Rantanen concussion protocol, but it looks like they kind of dodged a bullet here, and Rantanen, he was working out and skating on his own, so it could have been a lot worse. So no Rantanen in the game last night for Colorado, but still 7-4. Holy smokes. Wyatt Johnston with a goal, a couple of assists. All of a sudden, Dallas has won 9 out of their last 10.
And a big one against the Edmonton Oilers right the other now, day, too, Jeff. Like that statement went against Edmonton,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. 5 bagel. I mean, they've been putting up, you know, big numbers against good teams here for a while now.
Yeah.
If the playoffs started today, though, they're facing off against the Vegas Golden Knights, which I love.
Here's your
which
present.
Which I absolutely love. Here's your present. And, oh, look, Mark Stone's back for game one. Look, I know I'm in the minority on this, and I know a lot of people grouse sometimes about the first round and how, oh, it's awful that some of these teams who could be lifting the Stanley Cup in June have to be gone in the first round.
Nah,
that's BS. I love that.
Yeah,
I love it. Give me the best teams when they're at their healthiest.
Yeah.
Because as the playoffs go on, they will not be. And then you get the built-in excuses. Well, we didn't have our starting goaltender. He was injured. Oh, our blue line was a mess. You know, we lost defensemen 2, 3, and 4 in the first round. And we're doing this with toothpaste and toothpicks. MacGyver style. It's our American Hockey League defense. And no. I love the idea of Dallas and Vegas in the first round. Absolutely love the idea of Dallas and Vegas in the first round. So that would be one. Colorado and Winnipeg. I mean, for the longest time, we kept saying, you know what, it's really important to win. It's really important to win that Central because you don't want to be 2 or 3. Well, you know what? You finish first in the Central. All of a sudden, it looks like you're getting the Vegas Golden Knights. That's no bargain.
No.
That's no fun. Maybe you might want to rather play Colorado or Winnipeg. Vancouver and Nashville. Now, I was saying this on the podcast last night or this morning. As far as Vancouver goes, I mean, I don't have a horse in this fight or horse in this race or dog in this fight. at all. I just want, you know, I just want pure chaos and I want hockey outrage at the first round. So that's why I would kind of like to see Vancouver face off against Vegas in the first round and have Mark Stone appear game one.
Oh, yeah.
Because all the takes will be very sane and not emotional and reactionary whatsoever.
Not one bit.
And there will be no hockey outrage whatsoever. But if it started today, it's Vancouver and Nashville. Edmonton facing off against the Los Angeles Kings, comma, again.
Yeah.
Maddie, before we get to the East, do you have a thought of any of these matchups in the Western Conference?
Yeah, the Dallas-Vegas one is probably the premier matchup because, and it's just the way Vegas is playing right now, and hopefully they get healthier going into the playoffs. It sounds like Aiden Hill is going to be making the trip. You mentioned Tomáš Hertl might be making his lineup debut tonight for Vegas.
Yeah, I think he's sounds like he's playing.
It did sound like that. Yeah. So that one is really interesting. You know, I did want to focus on something you said though, with people grousing about the playoff format. When you look at all the teams in the playoffs, what are we going to say? You got to beat a good team. You got to beat three good teams to get to the Stanley Cup final. So it doesn't matter if you play them in round one. It doesn't matter if you play them in round two or three. And that's where I think, you know, when we're focusing on the West as a whole, it's very strong right now. And I didn't know that we were going to have that conversation based on, I don't know, I thought the East looked pretty good. There was some, you know, New Jersey fell off and we didn't expect that. Buffalo didn't take the step we thought they were going to. Same with Ottawa. But in the West, it's hard to pick a winner out of there because it might be Vegas that goes on another run again if they can get healthy, if Aiden Hill comes back. So I think that the West just overall is a gauntlet to try and get through. And if Colorado's healthy and if Winnipeg can, you know, manage to play the way that they played, you know, in the middle part of the season where they were not giving up goals and they were getting some timely scoring up and down the lineup. But then it always comes back to Dallas for me, Jeff. Just the depth that team has both up front, on the back end. And what did you mention? If Jake Oettinger can get hot, boy, oh boy, you better watch out because it's not gonna be for a lack of goal scoring that they're gonna get shut down, that's for sure.
Most balanced team in the NHL, provided they get goaltending.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Like, you look at the forwards, and we talked about this last week. The 78 Bruins had the 11 players that had 20 goals. Holy smokes.
Yep.
All right? Like, I don't think that's going to happen again. But you have a look at Dallas. Like, they're not that far off. Robertson, 27. Hintz, 30. Pavelski, 26. Marchment, 21. Deschene, 25. Sagan, 25. Ben, 21. Johnston, 31. Like, you want to talk about a balanced attack, and then you have someone like Radek Faksa, who's on your fourth line, who teams have called for. By the way, teams have called on Radek Faksa for years. For the longest time there, it seemed like the Vegas Golden Knights were trying to get Faksa. Like, every single year, Vegas tried to get Faksa. Vegas tried to get Faksa. And this year is no different. I think teams called on Faksa as well. I think that, you know, someone like Pete DeBoer would have gone to bat, and certainly Steve Spott. I mean, old Kitchener Rangers there. And that's where Radek Faksa played his junior under Steve Spott. I don't think DeBoer ever coached him. Could be wrong. I think that's when Steve Spott did, and he's an assistant coach with Dallas. That's the kind of guy that Pete DeBoer loves in the playoffs. I think if there's any consultation with the coach about what should we do with Faksa, I think Pete DeBoer is probably saying, keep him here. Thank you very much. He's a playoff guy. Don't worry about the production in the regular season. That guy's going to show up in the playoffs. They're just good, and they're just balanced. And even I know it's Vegas if it ends today. And again, we'll see what happens by the time this whole thing starts. But if it is, then that is the best series in the opening round, period. Because in the East, you're looking at Boston, Tampa, Florida, Toronto, New York, Detroit, Carolina, Islanders. We'll get there in a couple of seconds. Your point about the West is the right one. You don't want to face anybody.
No.
Like, at least you could say in the Eastern Conference, like, okay, I'll take Metropolitan 3 and I'll take Wild Card 2. Like, if you're choosing.
Yeah.
But, like, who are you going to pick? Like, if you can pick your opponent in the first round in the Western Conference, who are you choosing out of these murderers?
No one. And if you had to pick one, it's probably Nashville because they don't have the same type of high-end, like that elite talent like the other teams do. But they're balanced, and they've got a really good coach, and the goalie can get hot. So that's the only – but even then, Jeff, I'm just saying that because if there was a team that you – if you were – you know, if you had to pick one, that's the one. But it's not like you're comfortable with that decision. You're like, well, you're doing it kicking and screaming is what you're doing. So I think the West is just – I don't want to – you're right. Don't play anybody.
Matthew's going to get 70.
Man, I'm telling you, Jeff, I had a bunch of Habs fans in my mentions when I said that he was going to score. I thought 70 was a lock, and then people were reminding me, oh, you said 70. That's fine. But I always said, like, he can go on one of those stretches where he has, like, 2 goals in 10 games, but he's also the same guy that can score 12 in 10 games. And that's kind of where I feel like we're at with Austin Matthews at this point. Does it not feel like he wants to take 90 shots at the net every single night? And he's flying. He's playing excellent. And I can see why he wants to get to 70. Here's the other thing. And I don't know that it's great for the Leafs, and I it would be something to, you know, that they can't do in the playoffs. They're deferring a lot to Matthews. Like, trying to get it to him in spots that's like, that's not the right play or the easy play. And that's, you know, we talk about that. You just over committing to trying to get Matthews to 70. I get it, but it does take away from their game a little bit. But he's scoring 70. He's scoring 70, Jeff. Like, you know, you're not guaranteed to get back here again. So I think he's scoring 70.
Here's the question that I have, because I think at some point they're going to look to rest them for at least one of these games down the stretch.
Yep.
Like, they've got those last two games in Florida, one against the Panthers, one against Tampa. What if he's sitting at 69 goals?
He's playing. He's playing. That's what I said. If he...
What's more important? What's more important?
I agree. But if he... Again, it's also like there's a very good chance he's not getting 70 again or getting close to 70. That's just the way that the world works. I think if Austin Matthews does not score...
I don't know about that one, Matty. I don't know about that one. I don't know about that one.
I think that if he doesn't score in the next two games, then he's guaranteed to sit one game down the stretch. But I'm not convinced that if he's at 69 goals going into the last game of the year, that he's going to be sitting. They may try and throw him out there a lot early and then sit him the rest of the game.
No, if he's playing, he's playing. And there's an empty net situation, he's going to be out there. Like,
sure.
When he's in, on the he's going to be in, because you want to get him to the record. That I could maybe see. If he's sitting at 69 goals after the Florida game and you're thinking about scratching him against Tampa to give him rest, maybe he's just your power play guy.
Yeah. Ovechkin does it.
I'm not a big fan of sitting players like that to begin with, but I know it's a thing and everybody does it. Still, I would still put the playoffs more important, obviously, than an individual record. But nonetheless, we shall see what happens. How about Brady Tkachuk over the weekend?
Oh, boy. he had himself a day.
He had himself a day, but then very quietly, he made one of the best plays we saw all weekend long.
Mm-hmm.
On that Jake Sanderson game winner, the overtime winner against the Washington Capitals, did you see the perfect screen? Just skating right by Charlie Lindgren, just slow enough. You know what it was? It's an eclipse. Eclipse Monday. Honestly, dude, right in front of Charlie Lindgren, like perfect. And then as soon as Lindgren's eyes can't see the shot, Jake Sanderson lets it go. But it's a perfect, and Connor McMichael standing in front of the net, and he doesn't know what to do. And it's Brady Tkachuk, and Sanderson scores and they win. Washington leaves a vital point sitting there. And they're pissed. You can understand it. I get it. But I know we're all going to focus on, you know, him chasing Nico Hischier, or, you know, him trying to kill everybody on Saturday in that game against the New Jersey Devils, where he was, you know, one shy from tying the record set by Zdeno Chara. And by the way, I don't know about you, Matty, but so Brady Tkachuk is credited with 16 hits.
Yeah.
On Saturday in that game against the New Jersey Devils, right? And you say to yourself, whew, your shoulder's going to be pretty sore there, bud. And no one questions it, okay? Nobody questions it. Zdeno Chara has the record, 17. Islanders.
Oh, yeah.
If there's one team that we've all kind of looked at sideways historically when it comes to hit stats,
that would be them.
It's the Islanders.
Yep.
You know what though? Here's what I'd be curious about, because right now the way that, let me go on a little bit of a rant here, a little tirade. So the way that hit stats are kept now, it's just if you make body contact with someone who's around the puck or who has the puck, you get credit for a hit. Okay? Now, somewhere along the line, the term body checking turned into hits, and they're two separate things. I am firmly still, and you can call me old school. You can call me the school they burned down to build the old school, Matty. I don't
That's
care.
Old.
I am firmly of the belief that you should only get credit for a hit if you make body contact with someone who has the puck and it forces a change of possession. Otherwise, it's just a collision.
And then we have two different stats.
How different would stats, the hit stats look?
Oh, if wildly different.
The real definition of a hit, you hit the player and it forces a change of possession. Otherwise, what are you doing? Okay, so you made contact. Whoop-de-doo.
Well, especially...
Didn't force anything, didn't change anything. You just hit the guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
The way that the game has changed... The way that the game has changed, too, those numbers would be very low. Like, there's not a lot of body checks that, you know, change possession. So, no, I don't necessarily disagree with that. It is... I feel like at this point, like even the definition of, you know, what is close to the puck? What is, so you don't even have to have possession. What is close to the puck? Is it 2 feet? Is it 3 feet? I don't know.
I think the number, it used to be 0.8 seconds after the puck has been let go, that you have 0.8 seconds still to hit the person. After that, it becomes a penalty.
And who's got the stopwatch?
I think it's 0.8.
Who's got...
No, I know. Well, this is... No. You know what this is? This is for the purposes of suspension. Like, this is the Department of Player Safety that'll go pixel by pixel by pixel and determine, okay, here's the cutoff, whether we think this was a late hit or not.
Yeah.
I still think it's 0.8. I could be wrong.
You're probably right. So here's what I... Now, just circling back to the Brady Tkachuk thing. So of his 16 hits, this is my favorite part. Does he hate Brendan Smith? He has to, right? He hit Brendan Smith 7 times in that game. Like, he has to hate Brendan Smith. Has to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, he's like their most physically robust guy back there. Right?
I mean, I guess.
Brady Tkachuk's not picking his spots. I mean, Kevin Ball is huge, but when you're talking about, like, you know, a big, you know, tough, you know, big tough player, like, that's okay. That's one point that I wanted to make about last week and that brawl at Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure that New Jersey thought it was going to go the way that it did with everybody fighting on the ice. And here's why. If they thought that's what was going to happen, wouldn't they have not started John Marino?
100%.
But instead started Brendan Smith?
Yes.
That's the one thing that I look at and I say, I don't think New Jersey thought that was going to happen. That might be more on the Rangers side, where all the guys said, hey, our boys fighting, we're all fighting. And that's why you saw Barclay Goodrow right off the draw, not even look at Chris Cherney, and just pointed at Kevin Ball and said, we're going. And there's Leonard going, am I going to have to do something here? And he ended up having to, and it was against K'Andre Miller. Anyway, just an aside there. Like I thought about it. I think we've all thought about it more. I'm like, if New Jersey was going to do that, why was Marino out there?
Yeah, no chance.
Big weekend for Brady Tkachuk. I know we're going to focus on all the hits, but, oh, man, that screen was a Picasso. Couple of other things here. The Philadelphia Flyers have lost 7 games in a row.
Yeah, not great.
And the Philadelphia Flyers cannot lose a game like they lost against the Columbus Blue Jackets, who tied a record with 6 goals, all 6 coming from defensemen. That is a record going back to 1992 with the Washington Capitals.
Not the team I would have thought.
You'll notice. No, I know. And you'll notice, though, How much different John Tortorella sounded after about, you know, we need to stay positive. We need to stay positive. Like he's spent a lot of time testing players. We talked about this. He spent a lot of time testing players. He spent a lot of time putting players through situations that make them uncomfortable to see what he has as a coach in that player. And the one thing that I keep coming back to now here is, are these guys just exhausted at this point? Like this whole season has been one big test and they've passed the test up until late March, early April. I think the goaltender is exhausted. I wonder how many players are exhausted too. Because you can look at it as one of two ways, I think. Well, three really, but I don't think the third is true. The third would be they've just quit, and I don't think that's true. This is either a team that is A, exhausted, or B, weren't good enough to begin with. And I don't believe that. Because I don't believe you can, you know, just fluke your way through that many games.
No.
Into that spot based on your expectations. I just think they're exhausted. Did they not look like an exhausted team? Like, how do you go into that game against Columbus and lose like that if you're not exhausted?
Yeah.
They just look like a tired team.
Yeah, they look like a tired team. And also, like, John Tortorella, you only have so many of those bullets that you can use during a year, right? Like, you can't keep harping on the same thing, and you can't go out and just berate your players, and you can't. That eventually wears thin, and the players just stop listening to you, and that's how you lose your job. Do I think John Tortorella is going to lose his job? No, because I think this team has performed way above expectations. But I also do agree with you. Like a lot of these players, it's a very young team. It's not a veteran-laden team. And some of, you know, like one of the guys that is a veteran, they traded away. Sean Walker, they traded away. Like they got younger throughout the season. And so to me, I think that's part of the conversation. It's inexperience. I agree with the fatigue thing. Because these guys, a lot of these guys, they're not playing haven't played these meaningful games this late in the year. Like of the veteran guys that are there, how many guys have played these types of games? Like, you know, Nick Delorier, Sean Couturier, and even Sean Couturier hasn't played too many of those meaningful games this late in the year. Certainly not over the last little bit. So I would agree with you. I think it's just, I think it's a lot for a young team, but also this is going to, whether they make it or not, this is going to, A, tell the organization who you want around long term, but it's also going to only bode well for this group going forward.
It's a lot of, like, a lot of talk over the weekend after that Columbus game about how, you know, there will be repercussions if they don't make the playoffs by this point.
No.
You know, and I always try to sort of pull back on situations like this. Like, we played that clip from Derek Lalonde at the top of the show. And, you know, one of the things that he's talked about is, and this would have been after the Buffalo game, the 3-1 game. You know, he talked about, you know, I think it was after the Buffalo game. He talked about, if you would have told us at the beginning of the season that this was the position we're going to be in, would you be happy? And he said, yeah, we'd all say, yeah. Like right in there for a playoff spot, this, you know, this deep into early April, like for sure we would. And I think the same thing about the Philadelphia Flyers. If you told them in this season, like remember, beginning of the year, what were we saying about Philadelphia? It's going to be San Jose. It's going to be Anaheim. It's going to be Chicago. It's going to be Philadelphia Flyers all competing for Macklin Celebrini.
Yep.
For the first overall pick. These are your top lottery teams right here, folks. If you would have told that general manager, that coach, that this is what was going to happen in the first real year of the rebuild, that on April the 8th, they would be 1 point out of the playoff, regardless of where they were before this 7-game skid, but that on April the 8th, John Tortorella would have this team within 1 point of the playoffs and have spent significant amounts of time in the playoffs, like in a playoff position.
Basically since the first week.
What would Briere, Jones, Hilferty, Tortorella, all of them, what would they have said?
Excellent.
Great year.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
You got the most out of this bunch. You got the most out of this bunch. But then here's where I'll circle back again to a conversation you and I had, I think, on the first week of the season. And that was, is John Tortorella the right coach for a rebuild? Because you know what he got out of this team? Everything.
Yeah. Yeah. What are we talking about? Find me the player.
Might not get the playoffs.
Find me the players that have gotten worse.
They might not get to the playoffs. And I always think of the Sam Kinison line. If you're going to miss heaven, don't miss it by 2 inches. The Flyers might miss the playoffs by 2 inches.
Yeah.
Good or bad for a rebuild? You can make the argument good because you don't want a loser mentality inside your dressing room at all. And you want to push, push, push. And you learn about the players. But again, come draft time, you're not going to be in that conversation for Macklin Celebrini or any of those top picks.
Yeah.
Discuss amongst yourselves. Anything else stand out for you from the weekend, Maddie, before we hustle along?
No, I mean, we do got to take a break, but I think we kind of covered off everything. I think the biggest thing for me coming out of the weekend is, you know, I think mm-hmm. we kind of mentioned it, avoiding the Mikko Rantanen significant injury. That's kind of the biggest thing, is that it doesn't look like it's significant, and hopefully he's ready, you know, in the next week, and the Colorado Avalanche going to the playoffs as healthy as possible, because that's a team that you want to see at full strength, because they're a lot of fun to watch.
Congratulations to Yegor Sharangovich.
30 goals.
The first Belarusian player to score 30 goals in the NHL. Do you know whose Belarusian record he broke?
I want to say it's someone that you know. I think it's got to be Mikhail Grabowski, right?
Yes, it's Grabo. It's my neighbor. 29 goals. Now, Grabowski still leads in all-time points for Belarusian players in the NHL. But individual goal scoring, congratulations, Sharangovich over Grabowski. I texted him this morning. He hasn't got back to me. Maybe he's really taking this one hard today, Maddie. We'll hit a break. Craig Morgan stops by here in a couple of moments on The Merrick Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. Back in a moment.
Covering the Blue Jays from an analytical perspective. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This segment of the Jeff Merrick Show is brought to you by Hyundai. And, you know, when you cover hockey and you cover certain stories and certain marketplaces, there are just some automatic go-tos. The one person who understands it at every single level and actually enjoys talking about it, even though he still gets the same questions over and over and over again from dopes like me. Well, Craig Morgan is one of those people, and he joins me now to talk about the Arizona Coyotes on and off the ice. Craig, how are you today, pal?
I'm well. How are you, Jeff?
I'm well. How, in my sort of preamble there to bring you on the show, I am always impressed. You are such a go-to guest when it comes to the Arizona Coyotes. What is the one question that you've been asked more than others that at this point you're just annoyed to answer?
Oh, wow, Jeff, that's a long list, actually. I'd have to go back through history to see which one's asked the most. I guess it comes back to relocation, right? Are the Coyotes staying or the Coyotes leaving? And I've been asked that over the past 15 years because there have been multiple potential sites, at least reportedly, allegedly.
Sure. Now, the latest situation is, of course, the auction and the parcel of land that the Arizona Coyotes are looking at here. If you can sort of just walk us through, and again, like the authority of time is upon us, so as economically as you can, where are we right now with the Arizona Coyotes, this preferred lot of land that they're going to bid on at auction coming up in June?
Well, the Arizona State Land Department posted publicly the auction notice with a date of June 27th. So that's the next big date. They will literally show up, and it will be a live auction with an auctioneer and paddles that you hold up with your bid. Now, I will caution people, it's not just about the winning price. You have to have a well-hatched plan. But until that comes, at least that's what we think, that's the next big date for the Coyotes.
Now, when this was initially discussed, one of the things that I was told to watch for in this parcel of land were contingencies or things attached to it, i.e., you can bid on this land, but this land has to have an arena attached to it. That's going to be one of the contingencies for being a successful buyer here. Do we know yet if there are any contingencies attached, or could some be added at this point, or is it too late?
Well, the state land department can't do that. So it's literally just an auction of raw land. I should mention, however, that this land is C2 zoning. Without getting deep into the weeds for that, it means that there is an arena allowed on it because same zoning. There was a proposed youth multiplex youth arena that was also C2 zoning in another area of the city. It has the same zoning.
Mm-hmm. You know, there have been reports that Alex Morello, the owner of the Arizona Coyotes, has been investigating the idea of selling the Arizona Coyotes at the same time as there is this area of land that we all know about that he is very much interested in to put together his arena project and entertainment district as well. I think a lot of people look at that and say it has to be one or the other. And I look at that myself, Craig, and say it has to actually be both. Because if one doesn't happen, then the other needs to happen, and that better happen quickly. When you hear things like, you know, talking to other people about purchasing the team, for me, I'm not surprised whatsoever, nor do I think anybody should be surprised. Although I do think plan A and the desired plan, obviously, would be to keep the Arizona Coyotes where they are in this new area where they're going to build the arena and entertainment district. How do you greet news like Alex Morello is talking to other people about buying the team?
Well, the problem with that report is that it didn't cite any timeline, didn't provide any context whatsoever. It was basically one paragraph and then a rehash of everything we already knew. Mm-hmm. I agree with you completely. You have to have contingency plans. It's just smart business. And yeah. I imagine the league wants that as well. You have to know what your options are if you don't get the land. I believe wholeheartedly, and listen, Jeff, they don't go on the record, but I've just talked to the Morellos a couple times on the side. This is personal for them. They don't want to lose. This means a lot to them. I really believe that they're going after this hard to win this. Whether that happens or not, we'll see at the auction. But I don't believe that they're out there saying, oh, hey, maybe we should sell this team. This is, like I said, personal, almost ego-driven to Alex Morello. He wants to win this auction and prove he can do this.
How was the Ryan Smith, if we got a team in Utah, what should we name it, tweet received by Arizona fans today?
Well, I haven't had time to take the temperature yet, Jeff, because it just came out and then you quote tweeted it and I asked you if you're trolling Coyotes fans. So you tell me how we should receive that news.
Well, listen, my like everything underneath that tweet that I put is honestly, it's a lot of Arizona Coyotes fans, and like it's being received as a shot at the Coyotes, rightly or wrongly. But that's how this whole thing is being received. Does that surprise you at all?
No, not at all. It's been going on for 15 years here, so it's just the latest chapter. Listen, I do think relocation is a possibility. I mean, Javier Gutierrez said in that lengthy Q&A that I wrote when they posted the auction, if we don't get this land, we have to consider relocating the franchise. Now, I do think, and as John Gambadora reported, there are potential local buyers. I know there are because I have spoken to some of them. The hard thing to know, Jeff, is just how serious those bids are when they dive into the details of what it means, including the asking price. It's impossible to explore that because no one will talk about it until the team is actually for sale.
You know, I am curious about other, you know, local investors, local buyers. Again, I'm going to get way ahead of myself here. And let's say this, that, you know, as Gutierrez mentioned, maybe this thing does get, you know, this organization does get relocated somewhere. As all of us know by now, and if you don't, you should, the NHL is not abandoning this market. The NHL is not abandoning the state. The NHL, if they lose this team right now, will go back to Arizona as soon as all these other issues get sorted out. How much local financial interest is there, you know, outside of Alex Morello, obviously, how much local interest is there, do you think, in bringing a team to Arizona should this team go the way of relocation?
I do think there's interest. Again, because I've spoken to groups, it's hard to gauge the level of interest. And then it's about the price and the same hurdles that they faced before. You know, I've heard this narrative floated out there that the NHL will come back quickly. And I wonder about it because we all know what the expansion asking price is, first of all. We know there's still no arena here in Arizona. And we know what the history of the Coyotes is in this market. They have struggled basically their entire existence here. So are guys lining up to pay that expansion fee and build an arena in short order? I have my doubts. I have to admit, I have my doubts. I've looked at some of the other processes and how long it took other cities to get a team back. And granted, it's apples to oranges because markets are different. But I have my doubts about how quickly expansion would come to Arizona if the Coyotes were to leave.
Let me throw one out at you here. I'm sure you've heard this one before and probably talked about it with a number of people. The idea of, even just temporarily, obviously, going back to Glendale. Now, I know there's a lot of bad blood between both sides, but as someone there mentioned to me, don't forget, it's an election year. Do you think that there would be any chance that the Arizona Coyotes, should they stay, go back to Glendale temporarily?
Well, it would take a whole lot of negotiation and work with that arena is undergoing renovations very soon, which would make it very hard to book the Coyotes dates. I actually reached out to Glendale City Manager Kevin Phelps to ask this very question because this rumor has been circulating that, hey, maybe they can play hybrid season, at least play some games at Mullet at Gila River Arena. First of all, he said there have been zero talks with the Coyotes. He would take direction from city council if they thought that made sense. But Glendale has moved ahead. They've actually sold off ice making equipment that was outdated. There are a lot of hurdles to cross for them to go back to Glendale. I don't see that being a viable option.
Okay, Coyotes on the ice. Based on what you thought would happen with this team at the beginning of the year and where they're now ending up, how do you evaluate this season? Like, I'll be honest with you, I was one of those people that looked at the team, looked at what they had constructed and said, I can see this team making it in the playoffs. Now, that's not going to happen. But based on expectations, how do you think they fared this season?
It's you have to divide up the season, right? After the new year, they were in a playoff spot, which is crazy to think about. They definitely, it felt like they overachieved a bit because I looked at this roster and I saw the deficiencies both up the middle and on the blue line, which Bill Armstrong has talked a lot about needing to rebuild. I thought they overachieved, and then the Salt Lake news hits and the Coyotes go winless in February, 0-12-2. That really doomed their season. They've actually come out of it and played over 500 since then. So overall, I think there's another step in the right direction here. Most of the major prospects still aren't here, but Logan Cooley has made a bit of a mark. Dylan Gunther has really made a mark since he got called up. So you're starting to see some of the pieces of the future. You can really see what they're starting to build here. I've said this to you before, Jeff, in all my time covering this team, I've never seen a more complete hockey ops department than they have right now, from management to scouting to development. They are locked in on all of these things. I've talked to junior coaches, college coaches who agree with me. They really like the way they're handling their prospects. There's a lot to feel good about with the Coyotes, and it does feel like they're moving forward. Of course, the specter of the arena looms over everything.
Let me ask you about a situation that we saw yesterday, which still kind of makes me laugh because we never see this. So the Coyotes are playing the San Jose Sharks. For those that may have missed it, there's an exchange behind the net. A number of players are around, and Josh Brown is just throwing punches. Now, we've seen officials get punched before. That's no, you know, we've seen that plenty of times. But I don't know that I've seen very often, if at all, players punch their teammates, albeit inadvertent, but Lawson Crouse caught a pretty good one yesterday. Any comment from either Brown or Crouse afterwards?
No, there's been no comment, but I know what you're talking. Yeah, he was throwing punches indiscriminately. I think he caught three different people, and one of them was Lawson who would come in to help. So I've never seen one guy take on two guys on the other team, and then, of course, his own teammate, as you mentioned. I'm actually not on this trip because, as you know, Jeff, there's a lot happening here in Arizona right now to cover, but it would be funny to actually ask Lawson Crouse about that exchange.
How's the mood of the team right now?
I think it's
I mean,
a little
not there right now, but how's the mood?
I think it's a little better now. But listen, with this latest news with the arena, I think everyone's in wait and see. They've heard this before. And it's the Morelos are guilty for the sins of their, you know, past ownership groups. But when you look at the track record of this franchise, everyone is skeptical. They just talk to us when it's done. So I think that's coloring everything right now. People want resolution. We know Alex Morello hasn't addressed the team. I think that's an important thing that he needs to do to give them a sense of what's coming. They've started with their public messaging a little bit, but I really think he needs to sit down with the team and give them a sense of what they're working on. Because there are a lot of insecure people right now. And I have to wonder, Jeff, to add this, if you're talking about three more years at Mullet, which is the timeline. They're not talking about putting shovels into the second quarter of 2025 and moving in fall 2027. Are these guys going to want to stick it out? Are there guys who are going to say, you know what? No, I'm not doing three more years. Trade me. I can't help but wonder if we're going to see some of that this summer as well.
Let's finish on a good story. I got about 60 seconds for this one. Not enough time to do it properly, but let's see where we get to. The Josh Doan story. When we look at bright spots in a tricky situation here in Arizona, what has this done to that fan base in Arizona? Josh Doan.
It re-energized him. It was an injection of energy into the entire team and the fan base. The fact that it's a Doan, it's literally a royal bloodline for hockey in the Valley. The most beloved player in franchise history, played at Arizona State, played for the Roanoaters, played for the Coyotes, Arizona raised. All of those are, it's unique to Josh Doan. We all thought, coming up, he'll just play it safe. That's what his dad told him. And he did. He played a smart game, but then he also scored two goals and he just brought the house down. It is probably the top moment of the season that I've covered thus far.
It was fun, so much fun to watch. Listen, Craig, you're always great to come on with. Thanks so much, as always, for stopping by. It's great to have you on the beat, the man with the most experience and expertise on the story. Thanks, as always, for stopping by, pal.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
There he is, the great Craig Morgan, who covers this and has covered the Arizona situation going back a number of years. And no, the saga is still not done. We'll wait to see what happens at auction, unless, and this is, I guess we can never call anything unlikely. If you followed this story long enough, you don't call things unlikely. But unless the NHL somehow intervenes and says, we can't go forward with this, at which point, chaos. But now we wait to see on June 27th and the results of the auction. Okay, time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book. Bet local. Matt Marchese, what do you have on your mind today of the two games to choose from tonight?
Let's go out west. It's the Golden Knights at the Canucks. The puck line is Canucks -1.5. Vegas is 4-2 straight up in their last six overall against Vancouver and 4-1 straight up in their last five in Vancouver. The under has hit in 11 of the 15 Canucks games overall and six of the last seven at home.
I'll tell you, this is two really good games. Hey, Pittsburgh, Toronto should be a good game, and Vegas, Vancouver. This one looks dynamite. And a lot of the news around this game involves the Vegas Golden Knights and our first chance to see Tomas Hertl as a member of the Vegas Golden Knights. I would imagine he would start on the wing and then eventually at some point slide into that center spot. We saw Logan Thompson hurt and leave the ice at practice over the weekend. He's fine. He'll probably get the start tonight. Oh, by the way, for Hertl to get into the game tonight, they're going to have to do a little bit of salary cap maintenance here. So expect them to send a couple of players to AHL Henderson. I would imagine that Brendan Brisson would be one of them. Yuri Patera may be the other. That's what CapGeek speculated earlier on today. So our chance to see Tomas Hertl, thankfully Logan Thompson is okay. Aiden Hill making the trip, not expected to play. However, as for the Vancouver Canucks, this is a really good team. Like, make no mistake about it, this is a very good team, but they're not going to rush anybody back, especially Thatcher Demko. We'll see what happens tonight. Vegas Golden Knights, Vancouver Canucks. It's the late game this evening. That's Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. This segment of the Jeff Merrick Show is brought to you by Hyundai. The 2024 Santa Fe Hybrid NHL Edition is made for those who drive hockey. Only 500 are available. Order yours today. Merrick Show Hour 2 is coming up here in a couple of moments. We're going to get on the NHL page and talk to Brian Boyle from the NHL Network former NHLer, a tour around the NHL, as every day brings with it another wild card team in the Eastern Conference. Can the Penguins grab WC2 tonight? We'll see. Merrick Show, Hour 2, coming up next.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Okay, welcome back to the program. Merrick Show on the air across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. Standing by for Brian Boyle here. Before we get to Brian, you want more on Philadelphia? Of course you want more on Philadelphia. You want to hear more from John Tortorella? Of course you want to hear more from John Tortorella. He's John Tortorella on Sammy Ersin and the goaltending. Quote, everybody throws the numbers that are out there. Everybody throws the numbers that are out there, and the numbers are bad. But we're not even talking about these games meaning anything for us if Erst doesn't play the way he's played. That's true. Then I throw Ivan into the situation coming in. Who knows where the hell he came from, and he has to play a game. We have Erst penciled in at maybe playing 18 to 22 games this year. Look where he is now. So there's no blaming. Let's face it, things got thrown into a really weird situation when we lost Carter. But having said that, we had discussions in the summer about the situation with Carter and figured something was going to go on, right? We've got to be honest about it. I made the decision I'm going to live or die with Erst when I played him all those games. I did not have the confidence, and it's certainly not a criticism. It's just my assessment of Sandy. I made the decision that we're going with Erst. I played the hell out of him. He's tired. What did we talk about off the top of the show today? One of two things with the Philadelphia Flyers, because option three is they've quit, and I don't believe the Philadelphia Flyers have quit. I don't believe the hockey players quit in general. It's one of two things. Either one, they're not good enough, or B, they're exhausted. And there's the coach saying, this goaltender is exhausted. With that, we'll bring in Brian Boyle, a former NHLer, analyst with the NHL Network. He joins me now. Brian, how are you today?
Hey, Jeff. Good. How you doing, man?
I am well, and, you know, the Philadelphia Flyers, like from this chair, from this side of the microphone, it's the gift that keeps on giving because it's been such a great story. The highs and the lows and the crescendos and the downfalls. I mean, it really kind of has been, I don't know, like a symphony so far. And every day there's new things to talk about with the Flyers. And you spend a lot of time playing on teams that competed against the Philadelphia Flyers in a very, you know, emotional and at times violent way as well. And now you follow the Philadelphia Flyers in your new capacity. When you look at what's happened to this team lately, losers of seven in a row, now find themselves out of a playoff spot. You know, they spent, you know, the majority of this season proving everybody wrong. And today now we have John Tortorella saying that Sammy Ersin is exhausted. I look at the Philadelphia Flyers right now and I kind of see the whole team looks exhausted to me right now. When you see the Flyers, Brian, what do you see at this point of the season?
Well, zoom out. I think if you're a fan of this team in any rebuild, you got to understand how rebuilds are supposed to work and what's the ideal scenario in a rebuild. Sorry, I got an echo here. But you want to play meaningful games late in the year. Now, I think it's funny that Torts is saying that his goalie's exhausted. You're not allowed to be tired with Torts, as far as I can remember. But I think more of it's the you know, the emotional part of what he's asked of this kid. He lost his goaltending partner. He's been thrust into this. I don't think it's a physical exhaustion as much as it is, here, carry the mail until we can find someone else to spell you once in a while. But as a whole, the group has been successful here, no matter what. I think they had, they've had so many surprises, a lot of breakthrough players, young players. They'll continue to develop, and if they draft well, they're in a good spot. But that doesn't really make any fan right now feel good about what's happened in the last 2 weeks.
No, because the expectations have been raised. Tell you what, if you have an Echo right now, we're getting you on Zoom. Log off, and we'll just give you a call back on your phone, and we'll do it that way to make it a lot easier on you as well. So, Maddie, if you can give Brian a call, we'll just do this one over phone instead of Zoom. Apologies for those watching on 360 that want to see Brian Boyle's Dick Tracy-like good looks. That's what Google Images are for. But it is an interesting point about how you're not allowed to be tired around John Tortorella. Like, one of the things that Tortorella has been criticized over this year is maybe riding his players too hard. Now, Tortorella has defended himself by saying, we need to know what we have here. We need to have a look under the hood. We need to know what everyone from Travis Sanheim to Sean Couturier to Cam York to Sammy Ersin is all about. And I'm of the belief that these last couple of seasons, and this year specifically, there have been a lot of players that have been tested to see what they have. And there are some that have flourished. And we think about players like Owen Tippett, who's been phenomenal for this team. And there are other players that have wilted and things haven't gone as well as they had hoped with John Tortorella behind the bench. And I mentioned, like, he struck a very different tone this weekend after that loss against the Columbus Blue Jackets, where perhaps there was a moment where you said, okay, I've been beating on these guys for way too long now. I need to take my foot off the gas. Because coming out of the Columbus game, there was a whole lot of talk about needing to stay positive. Like, it was a different tone coming out of John Tortorella, almost like there was that moment of realization that, hold on a second, the way we've been doing things, it worked for the longest time and it's not working anymore. I need to change this. Now, I'm not going to go as far as to suggest that there may be significant changes to the Philadelphia Flyers organization here if the Philadelphia Flyers, and again, they're still in this thing, right? They could still either qualify for third in the Metropolitan or wild card two here, right? There's two avenues for the Philadelphia Flyers. I'm not suggesting that there's going to be, you know, changes based on, well, the expectation changed this year and we found ourselves in a playoff position and that's what we expected. I'm sure for Philadelphia Flyers fans, at a certain point, they said to themselves, well, now the expectation is playoffs. Thank you very much. And, you know, you've sort of taken us to this path. You've gotten us to buy in. Don't turn this into a false start, right? Don't false start us at this point. But again, like Brian mentioned, you know, zoom out here a little bit and have a look at what's happened with the Philadelphia Flyers. This is not the way that rebuilds are supposed to go. In a lot of ways, what they kind of played with all season long was house money. We have Brian Boyle back. And let me add one more thing to the Philadelphia Flyers here. I know that I'm talking about them like this, and maybe it's because it feels this way because they've lost seven games, but the Philadelphia Flyers aren't out of this yet. Like, by the end of this, like, they could find themselves either third in the Metro or second in the wild card race as well. I just don't know how at this point they're going to stop the bleeding, especially now that the coach has pretty much come out and said, yeah, the goaltender's too tired right now. Thank you very much. You know what I mean?
This is a wild scenario because maybe this is a new tactic for him, like almost like a challenge. Ah, my goalie's tired. You know, we're kind of, he's pushed him so hard. I know he has, and that's what he does, but maybe he gets a little bit of, I'll show you, like, this is what, you know, they've put together a body of work that's been really impressive and they have come so close. They're not out of it. Right. You said it. They're not out of it. They yeah. Went three in a row. Who knows? Look at the Penguins. And how great would it be to have both of them in, actually? But
sure.
It's, you know, it's an accomplishment this year what they've done. He's tried different ways to pull strings of different players. He always does, with remaining kind of steadfast in his own philosophies. But, you know, they've been a great story. I think if they go on a little bit of a – if they heat up a little and they get in, they earned it. They deserved it from start to finish. Every team has had a dip this year. Pretty much, and a significant one with probably two-thirds of the league has gone on and been like, what is wrong with this team? Blow it up. I think that's probably two-thirds of the league this year at some point. You know, it happened. Yep. I mean, look at Edmonton, yep. LA, all these teams that are, there could be potential threats in the playoffs winning multiple rounds. So now, I mean, they picked a bad time to go through it. If they can stop the bleeding, that's another lesson learned as a younger group that going forward, again, is going to help with this quote-unquote rebuild.
The Habs, the Rangers, the Devils, and the Capitals. That's what the Flyers have remaining on their schedule. You mentioned the Penguins there a second ago, and this has been a great story. Like, we were all, you know, giving them last rites. Like, it felt like the Pittsburgh Penguins had, you know, one foot in the grave and the other foot was on a banana peel. And here we go, and they're done. And that's it for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And then it's like Sidney Crosby. To me, this has been one of the best performances we've seen, not just from Sidney Crosby, but from anyone in the past however many years. Like, he is willing this team into the playoffs to the point where, you know, I'm on that, you know, if Crosby gets the Penguins into the postseason, he's in that Hart Trophy conversation going away. But you look at that game against Tampa, and we've talked a lot about Penguins and, you know, the depth guys stepping up and the depth guys scoring. That was all about superstars. That was Crosby. That was Malkin with two. That was Letang. And they found something, really, in Alex Nedeljkovic as well, and he's been fantastic for this team. What do you see right now with the Pittsburgh Penguins, Brian? What do you see there?
I think write another chapter in the long, wonderful, storied career of Sidney Crosby. Add it to his legacy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's one thing to get all the accolades and the points and you're in your prime, and it's really fun to watch Nathan MacKinnon, and it's really fun to watch Connor McDavid, even Nikita Kucherov. These guys sell tickets. They get people to turn on their TV, and we all talk about them, and it's great. When, you know, the heart of a champion, and that's what it is. I don't want to be cliche or kind of corny with it, but he refuses to submit. He won't quit. And he got guys to buy in as well, guys to elevate their game. They weren't happy with Malkin early in the year. And, you know, he's obviously very motivated as well. He's a champion as well. He's got a different personality than Sid, obviously, but they've all bought in. And when you have three really elite guys, yeah, they're older, playing. If they play their best, other guys fall in line. You get some depth, like you said. You know, they didn't give away Jake Guentzel. They got Michael Bunting, and he scored a big goal for them last game. The game was funny, right? They started off pretty well, and then it kind of almost fell apart. And that happened not too long ago in Colorado, and they were able to come through and get a win anyhow in regulation. And that's really an impressive win at this time of year with what they've come and gotten over. And give credit to Mike Sullivan. He's obviously kept the room intact. He obviously still has their ear. He remains.
Yeah.
Steadfast. In my experience with him, he knows what's right. He knows how he wants his team to play, and he continues to deliver that message. And he's probably had to do that at some really trying times this year. And then they got some good saves. Like, they were a plus team all year long. It didn't make a whole lot of sense. And then they trade away their best winger, probably. And now they're in a playoff position. They're knocking on the door. That doesn't make sense. Nothing about this year makes sense for a lot of teams, but mostly Pittsburgh and a little bit Washington.
Yeah, and it would be wild if you know, at the end of it, Pittsburgh grabs that third spot in the Metropolitan and ends up facing off against Carolina Hurricanes in the first round. I want to ask you about your, because everyone has to have one. Like, I refuse to believe that someone can play on the Pittsburgh Penguins like you did and not have a Sidney Crosby story. Like, one of my favorites, I can't remember who told this one, but they were skating, I think it was in Denver, and, you know, had the whole sheet, but just only using half the ice. And after about half an hour, obviously, it all got chewed up. And this person said, hey, why don't we go down and use the other end of the ice where the ice is clear and clean? And Crosby said, no, we're going to stay here because it's harder. That's where I like to practice. I just think that is such a perfect Sidney Crosby story. No, we're not going to go down there. It's harder here. This is where we're going to get better. Do you have, Brian Boyle, a Sidney Crosby story that you can share? Either something you saw, something you heard. You know, Colby Armstrong told me when he joined the Pittsburgh Penguins and he went to the weight room for the first time and he saw Sid working out, he went up to him and he said, is there a league higher than the NHL that you're trying to get to? Because, like, we're already in the NHL. Like, how can you be working this hard? Like, is there another league on a different planet that you're trying to get to here, Sid? Brian Boyle, do you have a Sidney Crosby story?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a lot that have been told, but it was game 82 against Columbus in the 21-22 season. And Sid played maybe 15 and a half minutes in that game. We had a pretty big lead. It was the last game. Our playoff spot was pretty much, if it wasn't totally solidified, it was, I think everything was kind of you know, it was, we knew where we were going to be. We couldn't lose a spot in the standings. So he's, you know, he's not going to play a lot because Mike Sullivan is a smart man, mm-hmm. and he's going to get him some reps and give him a little rest. And I might have played 11 minutes, which was high for me that year. I was towards the top of how much I'd played that year. That was my mm-hmm. last year. And I was feeling pretty good. I had a little goal, puck went off my hip. About to have playoffs, you know, rest up a little bit. I was a little banged up because I was an old man, and you know, he's only a couple of years younger than I am. 15 and a half minutes, a 45 minute bike was what was in store for him after the game. And I went up to him not knowing what he was doing, and I saw him on that bike for at least 25 minutes, and I'm like, are you gonna get off? And he said, I only played 15 minutes. And I said, it's game 82. Like, you had a wrist injury, you rehabbed like a maniac, you yeah. played every other game. And we played two nights ago. You played 22 minutes. So what do you, you know, you got some reps. You got a good workout. He's like, no, I got to be ready. I got to be ready to play more. And he's like telling me this as he's breathing heavily and sweating all over the place. And he stayed on for another 20 minutes. It was a 45 minute bike that he cranked out. Yeah. I mean, this guy was moving. And I would have been yeah. dead on the floor if I had to play 15 minutes. And he's just, you know, he's kind of built different. You know, people say that about a lot of people. He really is. And evidenced by what he's done yeah. this year at his age and with all the noise and with the bad breaks that they've gotten, he just will not waver. He is going to try to win. He's competitive. I have another story about, you know, a fun game we were playing at his house during the Super Bowl, but I'll have to tell you that off camera because it shows his competitive nature. He's guy's an animal, man. He's all time. He won't lose.
Well, I think that's natural for like these, you know, super high end elite, you know, Mount Rushmore, Hall of Fame. All, I think that they're just wired like different, and everything is a competition. I mean, listen, you see it with brothers, like you see it with the Tkachuks, but like it's not exactly a secret that Nathan MacKinnon's wired exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. Like everything is a competition. But then again, I'll be honest with you, Brian. Like I'm firmly of the belief that you don't make it to the NHL to begin with unless you're wired that way. Like, I know you might be shy to say it maybe, but I'm sure you were wired the exact same way. Like, I don't believe anybody gets to the NHL and doesn't have that type of wiring in their brain to some extent. Agree, disagree?
I 100% agree. It's way too hard. And when it gets hard, you got to get mad and get competitive, really. I mean, that's what these guys are. It's a combination of a competitiveness with the confidence in yourself, but also the humility to understand like what drives these guys to work so hard. They want to be the best ever. Like they want to be the best ever. I think that's what they want, because how are you that competitive, that confident? Cause you don't go anywhere without that confidence, but also that driven, that worried someone might catch you or someone might beat you out or someone's better than you or you're slipping. Like all those three things, that humility, like it's not, there's no entitlement going on with any of these players that if they retired tomorrow, they're going to the Hall of Fame. They want to be the best ever. Yeah. And like I wanted to be the best, you know, high school player in the country when I was playing high school. I know I'm not in junior. I'm sticking in my high school. I'm going to be the best. I'm going to try to lead the whole New England and all in points. I'm going to win. We're going to be the best team ever in college. I wanted to win the Hobey Baker. It was all these things that, and then I got to pro and I was like, I got to survive first. And then see if I can be good and create. And then I realized, like, okay, my role is this. Now I'm going to try to be the best penalty killer I can be. But these guys are another level. If they get two assists in a game and they could have had two goals and they missed or they didn't like one little part of their game, like, Sid has a chance. He doesn't go in. He's there the next day in the morning working on that exact chance for, like, 200 reps of it. Like, he'll take that shot. Like, the deflection goals you see him getting now, he still practices those like a maniac. Oh. He makes Tanger shoot 1,000 pucks at him in that spot. Poor Tanger probably wants to go get some lunch, but he's built different too. He's a machine. Like these guys have it in them, but yeah. they have that humility too to not get caught. Like I understand these guys are good and they're coming for me. Part of that might drive it. I don't want to speak for them, but that's what I saw.
They're remarkable. Like I'm waiting when it's all done and this era of the Pittsburgh Penguins is over and we finally get, you know, a couple of years out and, you know, we get a chance to digest it and think about it and talk to all the people that were involved in it, not right away, but once they're a couple years removed and they get a little bit of perspective on what just happened. Because if you ask, I remember asking Nathan MacKinnon before he won the Stanley Cup, and we're going over some of his accolades, and he's like, no, look, shut up. I haven't done anything yet. Sid's done things. Sid's done this. Sid's done that. Sid's done this. It's just Sid. And he's still kind of that way in a little ways, but he's won the Stanley Cup too. But, you know, when you're a player, you really don't, I guess, I'm guessing you're never having never played in the NHL, you don't necessarily think about all the things that you've done while you're still playing. Like, I'm sure in some ways, Sidney Crosby still thinks he has something to prove. To me, he's got zero to prove. Zero. He can play the remainder of this contract, sign another contract, put up bagels across the board, and he's still one of the best I've ever seen play. Like I always say, the top five players for me are, you know, Wayne and Mario and Lidstrom and Hasek and Crosby. Like, those are my five. But if you ask Sidney Crosby, he still has something to prove. And I don't know that you get that perspective on it until you're a few years away from it. You know what I mean? Like, you don't get a sense of what you accomplished while you're still playing. Yeah. Does that make sense to you?
It does, because I've been out now. This is my second year out, and things are coming back to me. My son's asking a lot of questions. And, you know, you take things each year, and you try to learn and make yourself better in that way. But the goal is to win. The goal is to win the Stanley Cup. You're telling me the guy doesn't want four? He wants to hoist the Stanley Cup again. That's what has to drive you, because it's so hard and so difficult. And having not won one, but being close a couple times, I know how hard it is. And, you know, you can't tell me Nathan MacKinnon doesn't want to get four because his buddy has three.
Oh, yeah.
That's how competitive these guys are. They want it. And then they'll look at the greats who have, you know, four or five or six, and they want to go catch them. That's what they want. Championships, the narrative around all these different who's the greatest and who's the best. Mm-hmm. Like the argument against with Jordan and LeBron, like six finals, six rings compared to, I mean, and you can't say LeBron's not one of the greatest. There's definitely an argument there. I'm a Jordan guy myself.
For sure.
It's incredible to watch these guys because of that drive. LeBron's my age. We were seniors in high school at the same time. It's incredible to watch. And Sid's, you know, playing since he's 18, he's been playing in the NHL. And it's remarkable to watch. Yeah. I hope it lasts many more years because I love watching it. And I want them to win again because they were – you know, it was a really enjoyable year for me, what they did for me, and I'll never forget that. So watching them climb back into a playoff spot, at one point being in a playoff spot over the weekend, and I was telling my son about it, he's high-fiving me. Well, he was excited. He thought they were done, too, because he's eight. And the swings on eight-year-olds is crazy. Made me buy him a MacKinnon t-shirt because he was worried about Penguins. He's a little front-runner, that kid.
That's okay. I was 8 years old too. Trust me, I was the same way. Whichever way the wind blew, I think we're all that all wired like that. You know, when you look at the Western Conference, I want to finish up with a conversation about the West because you mentioned Nathan MacKinnon, and you know the good news is it sounds like they really dodged one with Mikko Rantanen. Those two hits from Matias Ekholm. I mean, listen, you were in Nashville, albeit briefly, but I mean, you know how much of an ox that guy is, and he caught Rantanen twice, and that second one, you know, really hurt him, left the game. Concussion protocol, but he's working out. He's on the ice on his own, so that's good. But I'll tell you, I look at the Western Conference right now, and I look at the number of 20 and 30 goal scorers that Dallas has. I look at that back end, and I say to myself, man, as long as the net minding is good, and Ottinger's been much better as of late, I keep coming back to who's going to beat this team. Do you have a team that you look at in the West and you say to yourself, who's going to beat this team?
I've been saying Dallas, I think, for 2 years now, because just playing against them in Dallas, they had a lot of the ingredients. So they didn't have Wyatt Johnston, who is obviously now probably a star. I mean, he was coming up on the scene, and now he's a star. I think Maverick Bork just got called up, right? We'll see. He's probably going to be a star because Dallas is.
He did. He all these. He got sent back. He got sent back down. He got called up for the day. He got sent back down.
Okay, well, I mean, and they're giving him a taste because he's done well, which is nice of them, but they don't need him. They're so deep. It's crazy how well has Matt Duchene worked out. It's wild to me. And they, you know, they're stingy. They're a little old school with how they play. Assuming the ref can't call a penalty every shift, he's not gonna. But they're gonna. That's how they play. It's like the old Detroit teams in the that we played when I was in Tampa in the 2010s, early 2010s, 13, 14, 15. They, you can't skate down the ice even if you're 50 feet away from the puck without getting hooked by someone. Dallas has a little bit of that. They grind. They have unreal skill. Yeah, if Ottinger plays 80% of what he can, that's a tough out. But then I can't look past the Vegas Golden Knights. I just can't. I just watched them last year. You know, they looked like they could have kept playing another 80 games if they want. They were just dialed in. I think they're going to find it. You know, they're getting a little healthier. I hope Stone can come back at some point and it doesn't hurt him. But there's going to be teams that could win the Cup also out in the first round in the West. The West is nuts. It's old school hockey to a certain extent. The first round, I cannot wait to watch, even if it's on a little bit later. But it's my job now. It's going to be a ton of fun to just see. It's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be absolute mayhem.
Yeah.
I can't wait to watch it.
So, well, like I look at the Western Conference, Brian. I'm with Brian Boyle here. I look at the West and I say, if I'm picking a team that I want to play in the first round, I don't want to pick anybody. I don't want to play any of these teams. I don't play Dallas and Vegas and Colorado and Vancouver and Winnipeg and Nashville and Edmonton. I don't want any of these teams. Like, no thanks. Like, that's how good this first round is going to be in the West. It's going to be outstanding. At least in the Eastern Conference, you can say, like, okay, maybe we can, you know, rough up the third in the Metro and the second wild card. But there's none of that in the West. They're all killers. Like, they're all killers, Brian, in the Western Conference.
Now, Winnipeg could get outshot 24-8 and have three goals. They score on every shot. Like, they have so many weapons. And if Demko could come back healthy and give you a stretch, that's a different team. They could win. Nashville has a new coach this year and takes you some time to figure out what he wants from you. You have guys that have won on that roster. I get that they had a big heater, and if you take away that huge stretch, they're not really a playoff team, but guess what? I mean, they did it. Same as Edmonton. Edmonton did it. These teams can get hot. And if Saros plays well, which I've seen him do, lights out. And, you know, Luke Shen and Ryan McDonough are so stingy in front. No one's touching them. You let Yost go and dominate. Another hard guy, in my opinion. He could – I mean, what he's done for them is insane, especially during their streak, Roman Josi. I mean, if you know, and then they can score when they're getting outplayed. You have Forsberg who can – score from the corner of the ice somehow. I mean, I look at guys like that. Like, Carolina's lacked that in the past few years, and they're so good that they got to a certain point. Now they could potentially have a game breaker, and Aho keeps getting better. Nashville has a game breaker. Mm-hmm. They have one on D. They have one on forward. Like, they hold serve for a little while and just break through here and there. They could upset a few teams. Like, 1-8 in the West could win the Stanley Cup.
Yes, and, you know, Nashville's got Ryan O'Reilly, and they've got one of the comeback players of the year in Gustav Nyquist. Let me end on this one. So I was having a conversation with someone last week, and we were talking about Andrew Brunette. And this person said to me, no coach in the NHL has more or better face-off plays than Andrew Brunette. So let me throw this one at you. Of all the coaches you've had, who had the best face-off plays?
Oof. I didn't pay a ton of attention to those, especially the offensive zone ones. Believe it or not, it took a few face-offs in my career. We were more of like, you know, if it goes wrong and there's a 2-on-1 against, we'll never get another one. So let's go D-to-D, and I'll get to the front and try and get a deflection. You know what? So, but in Florida, him and Derek McKenzie, we had him on breakouts. We had him at D-zone. We had him everywhere. And it was if nothing else – everyone had to be dialed in for the face-off so they knew what we were doing. And there was no just drop the puck and play and react. We had purpose to every draw. I think that was really important because, you know, that was probably one of the highest I ever had in terms of face-off percentage, I think, especially in the D-zone when I played for Florida. And Bruno and Derek McKenzie were running things. Coop had a lot of good face-off plays, too. I got to shout out Coop in Tampa. But it was more for, you know, Thammer, Tyler Johnson, Kucherov, they were having fun with it. I was just excited to be out on an offensive zone draw if I ever got one.
You were there, man. You're in the NHL for a lot of years. Brian, listen, continued success on the NHL Network. Love your second career. Your first one was fantastic as well. We'll catch up soon, pal.
Thanks, Jeff. Thank you.
Brian Boyle from the NHL Network and former NHLer who played for a number of teams for a number of great coaches as well. So there's a certain authority when Brian Boyle speaks about coaches and their acumen. And it is true, like this person was sort of running down all the different ways that Andrew Burnett handles faceoffs, and you start adding them up. It's like, holy smokes. And the point this person was making to me is nobody in the NHL has more or better faceoff plays than Andrew Brunette, who is going to get a lot of attention and a lot of votes for the coach of the year. I know we're handing this thing to Rick Tocchet, I get it, but put Brunette very much in that conversation. Wonder what's happened to Tortorella in that conversation now, right? For the longest time, we kept saying, oh, it's going to be between Tocchet and Tortorella. Then Andrew Brunette came up with the Nashville Predators, and now we've seen what's happened to the Philadelphia Flyers, and that conversation has kind of gone away. We'll hit a break. We'll get it back on the Pittsburgh Penguins page here. They got a huge game tonight against the Toronto Maple Leafs as they look to jump back into Wild Card 2. Josh Getzoff, Pittsburgh Penguins play-by-play voice, joins me in moments across the Sportsnet Radio Network. It's the Merrick Show, also on Sportsnet 360 and wherever you get your podcasts. Back in a moment.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And this segment of the Jeff Merrick Show is brought to you by Hyundai. We've been talking a lot about the Pittsburgh Penguins, who for a hot minute there were in Wild Card 2. As a matter of fact, there were five different teams taking WC2 in 5 days right now that is occupied by the Detroit Red Wings. But teams like the Pittsburgh Penguins, the New York Islanders, the Philadelphia Flyers, the Washington Capitals have two roads to the playoffs, where a team like the Detroit Red Wings only has one. Josh Getzoff, play-by-play voice of the Pittsburgh Penguins, knows that, and there's a big game on the horizon tonight. The Penguins face off against Kyle Dubas's former team, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Josh Getzoff joins me now. Josh, how are you, pal?
Great, Jeff. How are you? Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you again as well. I was just talking to Brian Boyle before you came on, and I said, like, look, it's impossible to be a teammate of Sidney Crosby or work with Sidney Crosby or be around Sidney Crosby and not have at least one Sidney Crosby story. I mean, this is all sort of under the umbrella of what Crosby has been able to do here, namely resurrect the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mean, we were all calling for a priest not too long ago for the Pittsburgh Penguins, yet here they are right now, and for a hot minute, we're in a playoff spot over the weekend. What is your, since you've been with the Penguins, favorite Sidney Crosby story?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. Let me think about that while I give you one that came off the top of my head. I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but it's a good one just to give you an idea as to his mindset in the current. This was about 2.5 weeks ago back in Pittsburgh. I was standing by him. Paul Steigerwald and I were talking and standing by him in the locker room, and he kind of looked at us, and you know what the standings were back then. And he kind of looked at us and said, we're not out of this yet. And he said it in a way that, after everything that had happened here, you kind of looked at him and you were like, really, Sid, really? You believe that?
No.
And I didn't follow up with the question. I just kind of looked at him and nodded my head, and he said, we're not out of it. And I think the way that he's played since then, incredible description matching of the mindset that we saw there that day. So it's a unique privilege to be able to be around him on a game-to-game and day-to-day basis. I'd say, you know, one of the stories that jumps out to me is just the stuff that you don't necessarily see on the ice. I mean, this is a guy that's so driven. Obviously, his stats speak for himself. He's on the cusp of another couple of major milestones here coming into Toronto tonight as far as the statistics are concerned. But we just get to see him in Pittsburgh sometimes I wouldn't even say a spotlight, but in a sphere where he's not necessarily getting cameras on him. There's no photography happening, and I see it a lot downstairs. just the, I wouldn't say this is a single memory, but this is kind of just an encapsulation of a few of the kids that come to games that maybe are, you know, battling some health challenges or have served in our military, some of the men and women that have had some injuries and come and I don't think expect to see him, but are there just to hang out and be a part of the game afterwards, the stuff downstairs. Well, he takes the time, everybody. It's really incredible. It doesn't matter if they've won or lost.
Yep.
Everybody he will come up to and give that time to and say hello to and take pictures with and sign autographs and genuinely ask them questions about them and who they are, as opposed to just doing a flyby of a meet and greet. And it's stuff that doesn't always attract cameras, because I think that's his preferred way of doing it. He doesn't want it to be publicized, but I see it and I respect the hell out of it. And I think it's really it's a testament to who he is as a person on top of a player. Just the fact that he's literally a Hall of Famer on both fronts. And it's really a cool thing to witness.
You know, a buddy of mine, Shaz Ahmed, he owns a car service, and he was valeting cars at the Rogers Cups, a tennis tournament here in Toronto and in Montreal. And Crosby was going just to go watch. And so Crosby pulled up and gave Shaz his keys and asked him, said, "Is there going to be a bunch of kids there by any chance?" And Shaz's like, "Oh, yeah, of course there will be." He says, "Okay, good." So he grabbed like a stack of like other 8x10s or 4x6s or 8x, I don't know what they were, just photographs of him and a Sharpie, and said, "Okay, thanks for letting me know." And just went up there and very quietly, away from cameras, I think if there's going to be a bunch of kids there, they're going to ask for autographs, I might as well be prepared. And just spent, I don't know how long, just signing pictures of himself before going in to watch the tennis action. And that's to your point about understanding who he is, what his responsibilities and what his obligations are, being, you know, a superstar hockey player, specifically in this case in Canada, and not worrying about whether anyone's going to cover it or there's going to be a camera or someone's going to write about it. That's just the way that Sidney Crosby is wired. Now, let me ask you this about Crosby, because the way we've all, and you're right there, so you can tell us whether we're on base or off base. The way that the majority of us in the media have, outside of Pittsburgh, looked at this Penguins situation, we've said, this is Sidney Crosby dragging the Penguins into the playoffs, which I do believe. But then every time I say it, I kind of say to myself, well, that's pretty insulting to everybody else on the team. I know it's not just Sidney Crosby. Like, I get it. This is, as Brian Boyle mentioned before he came on, another chapter in, you know, this great hockey book of Sidney Crosby's. But you can't just do it on your own. Like, I look at Saturday, and Saturday was, you know, a pair of goals by Malkin, and Malkin's been fantastic as well. It seemed as if, you know, Chris Letang, you know, really kind of got lost a little bit after Jake Gensel got traded. There was that game against Edmonton where he really wasn't himself. And there's a couple of other games afterwards where it's like really wasn't himself. But he was excellent in that game as well. I know it's not just Crosby. So who else should we be looking at as far as a reason goes for why the Penguins now find themselves 1 point out of a playoff spot?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. When you phrase it, you know, that he's carrying the team, definitely does take it away from some of the other guys. But the reality is he still is very largely carrying this team with the effort that he's had this year. It's been incredible. And I would agree with Boiler. It's another chapter, and it's perhaps one of his best chapters he's written from just a singular effect standpoint so far with his time in the NHL and the Penguins. But as far as the rest of the team is concerned, two guys in particular jump out to me. Three guys, I would say, in particular jump out to me as far as the impact they've had recently. The first is the guy who's making his ninth consecutive start tonight, and that's Alex Nedeljkovic. He has been the Nedeljkovic that was a Calder Trophy candidate a few years back with the Carolina Hurricanes these last few weeks. He's really found his game. He's a battler, and I think that the way that he plays in net has really had an impact on the Penguins' mindset and psyche. And that's not to take anything away from Tristan Jarry. I think it's more just how Nedeljkovic plays. I mean, he, as I say, he's a battler. Like, he's not as, I would say, fundamentally sound as some of these other goalies. He's just athletic because he's not super tall. I think he's about 6 foot tall. So he relies on his quickness. He relies on his speed, and he's very quick at moving around in that net and making some key stops. And I think that he's kind of helped to buoy this team in a time where they really, I think most people thought, as you said, that the priest was being called in, the season was over, and it was on to the next chapter of the Pittsburgh Penguins. But Alex Nedeljkovic, to his credit, has come up with some huge games at timely moments and backstopped them. The other two guys that I'd mention is one guy is not going to get any accolades, but I think he's fit something that they've needed. And that's Jack St. Ivany, who I think a lot of people probably have no idea who that is. Maybe didn't even know he was in the Penguins lineup. They've put him in before that disaster in Colorado. He made his debut in Dallas towards the end of March. Since he's come into the lineup, and I'm not saying it's him, obviously, but certain elements seem to work in lineups, and he seems to be one of those elements. But since he's come into the lineup, they're 6-1-2 in the nine games he's played. He's a right-handed shot defenseman. He's big. He's steady. He's played in that third pairing role. He's been very good on the penalty kill for them. And he's another guy that's kind of worked his way up through the system. In talking to Kyle Dubas and J.D. Forrest, the head coach down in Wilkes-Barre Scranton, this is a guy that a lot of people felt like had taken some significant strides within the last year. I think he was just kind of held back on the depth chart. And Ryan Graves' concussion really opened up the door for a right-handed defenseman to go in there, as Mike Sullivan tries to do. He always tries to keep a lefty-righty in his pairs, regardless of the players available. And, you know, with Chad Ruedel departing at the deadline, St. Ivany was the next man in line there on the right-hand side of things. And he stepped up and I think has been totally suitable and has given them some stabilization in a third pair, which they haven't had in a lot of times this season. And then the third guy is someone who you know and Toronto knows is Michael Bunting. And this is a guy that came on board in the Jake Guentzel trade. I think everyone kind of thought, okay, Kyle Dubas is bringing in one of his guys. And let's call it for what it is. He is one of his guys. But at the same time, he has given the Penguins components to their lineup that they have not had. And Mike Sullivan said this, you know, on the record that he's given them Patrick Hornquist-type elements, and that's something that this team has not had since Patrick Hornquist left in that trade with Florida a handful of years ago. So he's been really productive. He's the one, I think, that is the singular – well, not the singular, but perhaps the biggest reason that Evgeny Malkin's game has hit another level here. Those two have clicked. He's, as you guys know, and we're learning by the game, he plays the same way every single night. He's always in that blue paint area. He's an annoying defenseman. And I think that his style of play has pulled the Penguins as a team back into the fight a little bit more. And I think those three guys, when you think about guys that aren't maybe the first names off the tip of the tongue, they've had big impacts here over the last couple of weeks.
So I'm glad you mentioned Bunting's name there. And I put this in my blog that came out yesterday. Now, my good buddy Stan Narodka, who's a longtime hockey researcher, still works for a number of teams doing stats and research for them for their broadcasts. What he does is he tracks players that get moved around deadline and how well they do post-deadline with their new team. So for the purposes of this experiment, or this analysis rather, he used 10 days previous to trade deadline and then tracked all the numbers to see who's performing and who's doing well. I think Peter Mueller all time was the biggest performer of trade deadline acquisitions. But this year so far, I'll read it to you in order. Jake Guentzel is number one, 13 games played, 20 points. He's been good for Carolina, no surprise. Number two is Alex Nylander of the Columbus Blue Jackets, who went from Pittsburgh to Columbus. He's been great, 19 games, 14 points. He's got 10 goals in the process. Number three is Michael Bunting. And you're right, like, we don't talk a whole lot about Bunting, but he's been great. 16 games played, you know this, five. This is going into Sunday's games, 5 goals, 8 assists, 13 points. I'm glad you mentioned his name because I'm not going to say he's a huge factor in all of this, but he has been a factor in all of this. Like, he's not Crosby, he's not Malkin, but to your point, he's helped, and he's helped Malkin. I think that the Bunting piece in all of this is really fascinating, and I do think, further to your previous point about Alex Nedeljkovic, you're right, he's not going to be confused with Ivan Fedotov or the Philadelphia Flyers, but he is a battling goaltender, and it's going to be an interesting decision. If he can get the Pittsburgh Penguins into the playoffs and they do something here, I mean, he's on an expiring contract. I know they like Blomqvist in the minors right now as a goaltender on the horizon, but like Nedeljkovic has kind of really put himself in a really nice position to set himself up for the future here with the Penguins, has he not?
He absolutely has, and I think the best thing for Alex in this whole situation is that he's 28 years old. He's entering a point in his career where he can use this to potentially facilitate a nice sum of money or a term for him in a particular spot, whether it's Pittsburgh or elsewhere. Yeah. I think the hope here, to your point, the hope here with the Penguins is that stays with the Pens. He and our friend Andy Kyoto, now the Penguins goalie coach, they've developed chemistry together. And, you know, the Kyoto's an amazing guy and really is I've come to become a huge fan of him, just getting to know him the last handful of years since he's joined the Penguins staff. And he and Alex Nedeljkovic have a very good relationship, which has shown itself in how Nedeljkovic has played this year. And I think that, you know, there's something to be said for that as far as him potentially wanting to stick around and be in this situation. But you're right. There is writing on the wall that this Joel Blomqvist, who by all accounts, his first year in North America has been a huge success. He's been the starting goalie more often than not in Wilkes-Barre Scranton. He's got the baby Pens headed back to the Calder Cup playoffs after a couple years out. And he will be the goalie that they ride for however long they go down in the playoffs. So I think that there is a thought that, I don't know if it's next year, but in the very not too distant future, that guy is going to be in the Penguins lineup on a regular basis. And whether he's backing up Tristan Jarry, if he's still here, obviously on that longer contract, or he's the starter himself, Blomqvist is going to be part of the equation. So I think for Nedeljkovic, it's all continuing to be putting himself in a situation right now where he becomes a very desirable person this offseason. Whereas we know and we've seen, I mean, I think about some of the goalie contracts that have been shelled out the last couple of years. People are desperate come July 1 when it comes to trying to find a starting goaltender. And if Alex continues to play like the way he is right now, unfortunately, he may price himself out of Pittsburgh, but he might put himself, personally in a really nice situation elsewhere. But I think until then, this guy's been a treat to be around and kind of watch evolve as the season has gone on. And I'm eager to see, you know, how he handles this one tonight. As we mentioned, it's his ninth straight start. These are all career highs for him as far as consecutive games played. He's never kind of shouldered this load, this type of load in the National Hockey League before, and at a critical time, too. So I'll be interested to see how he handles the Leafs tonight.
A lot of great stories to Nedeljkovic, clearly one of them. Josh, big game tonight. Very much look forward to it. Thanks, as always, for stopping by, pal. Say hello to my buddy Colby. You see him more than I do now, so tell him I send my best.
Hey, he and I are calling the game tonight, so if you're in the building, feel free to swing by the visiting TV booth.
Let's go
do a group hug.
I am so happy for Colbs, man. I'm thrilled for you and your ascent here. But I remember when, you know, Green as Grass, Colby Armstrong joined us at Sportsnet, and I was there for his first show. I mean, you've seen Colby nervous before. Now he's a pro. Like, now nothing phases Colby. But you remember Colby in the early years. Like he wouldn't sleep the night before. I'm like all of it. Like, wouldn't sleep the night before shows. I'm like, you're not in the NHL, bud. Like, you know, if you have a bad, you know, you're not gonna have a bad shift. If you have a bad shift, like, nothing's gonna happen. Like, if you mess up a name, nothing's gonna no one's gonna bench you. Like, it's okay. And he's like one of the best out there. I'm so happy for Colbs. Okay, listen, you be good, Josh. We will touch base soon. Enjoy the game tonight.
All right, thanks, Jeff. Talk to you later.
There he is, the great Josh Getzoff, one of the best play-by-play men in the NHL. This segment of the Jeff Merrick Show is brought to you by Hyundai. The 2024 Santa Fe Hybrid NHL Edition is made for those who drive hockey. Only 500 available. Order yours today. And today there are only two games on the go around the NHL. We just talked to Josh Getzoff there about the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Pittsburgh Penguins with a win tonight. Jump into that wild card spot, the one that we keep talking about nobody seems to want. Well, the Pittsburgh Penguins win tonight. That's five in a row for the Penguinos. And I know that if you interview or talk to Kyle Dubas today and you say to him, is it extra special knowing you could jump into a playoff spot by beating the Toronto Maple Leafs? He'll say something very diplomatic along the likes of, well, it really doesn't matter who we beat. That's not who we're focused on. We're just focused on getting this team into the playoffs. But come on. Come on. Born at night, but not last night, I think is probably appropriate there. And the late game tonight, the Vancouver Canucks facing off against the Vegas Golden Knights. You can see Tomas Hertl. Elias Lindholm on the ice, by the way, for the Vancouver Canucks, but do not expect him in the lineup this evening for Rick Tocchet's squad. Thanks to Josh Getzoff and Brian Boyle in Hour 2, Craig Morgan and Matt Marchese, our producer slash co-host in Hour 1. Technical operator Lance Kennedy, camera operator James Wilson, thank you, thank you. All these people made no mistakes. I, on the other hand, made plenty. Try to be better tomorrow. Merrick Show returns tomorrow along the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. Back tomorrow. Enjoy the games tonight.